is at 4:30. I'm Tom Rogers.
Today's programs are made possible with support from Parkland College Theater, presenting the fantasy comedy drama The Little Prince from Wednesday, April 6th through Sunday, April 17th. An aviator lands in the Sahara Desert where he meets a little boy from another planet. Reservations at theater.parkland.edu.
I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today for the Afternoon Magazine. We take a look at the weather now. High pressure centered over Minnesota is bringing cool and dry air in from the north today. Quiet conditions will be the rule through tomorrow. The next week, cold front coming from the west will bring a chance for some light rain or snow tomorrow night. High temperatures across the region will reach the low 40s and low 50s today, while overnight lows will drop into the mid-20s and mid-30s. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, mostly sunny with a high in the low 50s, and the wind from the northeast to 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, cloudy with a low of 28. The wind will continue out of the northeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a high of 48 and a light northeast wind. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain after midnight and a low of 34. Friday, cloudy with a chance of rain and a high around 50. Friday night, mostly cloudy with a low in the mid-30s. Saturday through Saturday night, partly cloudy with a high in the low 50s and the low Saturday night in the upper 30s. And the outlook for Sunday, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and a high in the mid-50s. At noon central time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the mid-30s to the mid-40s. Most Illinois locations seeing some sunshine, many Indiana locations seeing cloudy skies. Rockford reported 44 degrees at the top of the hour, as did Mattoon. It was 41 at O'Hare, 48 at Bloomington. Carbondale, where it was cloudy, reported 41 degrees. At South Bend, 42, Lafayette, 45. Indianapolis reported 34 degrees at the top of the hour with light snow. And at Terre Haute, it was 41. Willard Airport reported sunny skies at the top of the hour, 48 degrees. The dew point, 18. The relative humidity, 30%. The wind out of the northeast at 15 miles per hour with gusts to 23. And the barometric pressure, 30.03 and falling. At 12:40, 48 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. The sky is sunny.
WILL programs are made possible by the Center for Advanced Study, whose MillerCom 2011 lecture series presents Local Cultures, Global Inequities. Is Haiti Poor Because of Its Language? By Albert Baldwin on Thursday, April 7th at 7:30 p.m. at Knight Auditorium in the Spurlock Museum.
Tokyo thrives on electricity. Digital billboards dazzle, doors glide open automatically in shopping districts, and moving sidewalks transport people through malls and train stations. But the earthquake and tsunami have forced the city to reduce its power usage. NPR's Jim Zaroli has more.
For a young Tokyo hipster, Shibuya is the place to see and be seen. It's a busy, noisy crossroads where you can shop, get drunk, and hear a little live music. Alina Ishizawa, a 22-year-old beautician, stands with a friend watching the crowd. When you come to Shibuya, it's always a party. The whole city is having fun. I like to come here because it makes me feel energetic. But these days, the mood is more somber. Because of the power shortage, the giant electronic billboards that overlook the streets, making evenings in Shibuya as bright as day, have all been turned off. Hitotomo Takahashi, an office worker, scans the crowd trying to find a friend. Usually Shibuya is so bright you can see everyone's face, even if they're far away. But today it's so dark it's difficult to see people approaching you. The catastrophe of March 11th and the crippling of a major nuclear complex have dealt a big blow to Japan's power supply. And residents have been asked to contend with electricity shortages, something virtually unheard of here. All over Tokyo, escalators have been turned off, trains are running on limited schedules, and restaurant patrons eat in the dark. Even the emperor is said to be turning off lights in the imperial palace. Naoki Kobayashi manages a club in Shibuya with private karaoke rooms. Unlike a lot of businesses nearby, he's stayed open throughout the crisis, but he's had to reduce his hours. We're doing what we can. Of course, it's a business that uses a lot of electricity on a regular basis, so we've turned off the lights outside, and we turn off the lights in rooms when they're not being used. When measures like these aren't enough, there have been rolling blackouts in some neighborhoods. In Fujisawa, on the far outskirts of metropolitan Tokyo, Hiroko Kamamoto stands in the kitchen of her apartment making tea. Power has been shut off in her neighborhood 5 times since the earthquake, and without electricity, she can't use her oven or run water, and the heat goes off. Usually it's just my husband and me living here, and we know ahead of time when the blackout is going to occur. If the blackout is in the morning, we try to get up early and use the bathroom before it begins. If it's in the evening, we eat ready-made meals and dine by candlelight. Kamamoto says she wishes the blackouts were more predictable, but she says she understands what the country is going through. Of course, it's inconvenient for us, but when I think about the people up north and the struggle they have, this is the least we can do to help the cause, so we're doing what we can to get through it. Like a lot of people, Kamamoto says she's hoping the power supply improves by the time hot weather arrives and people need to use their air conditioners. But power company officials say they can't be sure how long the blackouts will last, and that means things could get worse before they get better. Jim Zeroli, NPR News, Tokyo.
Honda is reducing production at North American factories beginning today because of a shortage of parts. Toyota is asking U.S. car dealers to stop ordering certain replacement parts made in Japan. It's worried about running out of them. By one estimate, about 13% of auto output worldwide has been lost due to this month's earthquake and tsunami. U.S. carmakers, meanwhile, announced their sales figures for March this week. The numbers are expected to continue a relatively strong trend, but auto industry analysts worry recent world events will hurt Detroit's bottom line in the months to come. NPR's Sonari Glinton has that story.
Recently, things have been relatively good in the car industry. Sales up, profits up, even perceptions of the U.S. auto industry up. Then news from the Middle East and Japan.
Major things like this could throw you a curveball and slow down that sales rate.
Lonnie Miller is an auto analyst for Polk Marketing. He says automakers probably won't be hurt this month by supply disruptions from Japan, but next month, that's another story.
I'm certain that people are going to really start reporting deficiencies in their sales by next month in April.
Chris Hobson is an analyst with IHS Automotive. He says this is all happening when stuff was starting to get good for Detroit.
The timing couldn't be worse for a double shock for the industry at this point.
Hobson says we're still not sure exactly the extent to which the crisis will affect car production in Japan or the U.S.
If the worst case of all these double shocks, you know, oil prices continue to go up, the crisis in Japan exacerbates, and the unknowns are still unknown, the longer it will take to bring everything back online.
Hobson says he can't predict how long it'll take to get production back online or how high gas prices will go, but he can say they probably won't be good for auto industry profits. Sonari Glinton, NPR News.
27 years ago, Chrysler invented the minivan. After being wildly popular for years, the segment lost customers, first to SUVs and then to crossovers. Now minivans are getting a makeover. Tracy Samilton reports.
Pity the poor minivan. It hauls the family on vacations, never complaining, schleps the kids to school and soccer practice, ever ready for a spontaneous trip to the hardware store. But does it get any respect? It gets called names, like loser cruiser, road slug. Well, if you make minivans, you can get mad. Or, like Toyota, you can embrace the situation with a tongue-in-cheek rap, the Swagger Wagon, sung by an unhip, white, yuppie, suburban couple.
We rock the SE, not an SUV. And it's true, if I were you, I'd be jealous of me. In the Swagger Wagon, yeah, the Swagger Wagon.
The people who design minivans are the first to admit they're fighting an image problem. and they're doing something about it. Chrysler has an optional all-black leather interior, it nicknamed the Man Van. All four of the biggest players, Honda, Chrysler, Toyota, and Nissan, rolled out new designs this year. There's more sculpting, more chrome, more creased sheet metal, even jaunty little fins. Sage Marie is with Honda.
If you think of what makes a sports car compelling, it's that it's low and wide, right? It's what makes it emotionally exciting. So from a styling standpoint, we tried to do that with the Odyssey.
Hey, little minivan, we're going to the grocery store.
Well, upping the cool factor may help, but people really buy minivans for comfort, convenience, and practicality. The sliding doors, all that space, and the seats. Minivan designers take fierce pride in their seating configurations. Honda's minivan has a second-row middle seat you can slide really close to the front seat. That puts the baby within arm's reach of a parent. For Chrysler's Ben Winter, the bragging point is their stow-and-go seats.
You can take this seat and just fold it into the floor, and away it goes, and it just disappears.
Fold all the seats down, and there's enough room for a refrigerator or two. But one company thinks some customers could be willing to downsize a little, especially as gas hovers around $4 a gallon. Ford Motor Company's new small people mover, the C-Max, will seat 7. It will have sliding doors. But Ford's Paul Anderson says it will get car-like fuel economy. Just don't call it a minivan.
It's a multi-activity vehicle.
But other companies think that lots of people will still want all that room. Back at Chrysler, Ben Winter says in the end, people who want a minivan will buy it, no matter what it's called, because nothing out there can better meet the needs of a family as it goes from small to large to empty nest.
That's why minivans continue to remain popular, despite many people predicting for many years that all the segment's dying, the segment's dying. It's not.
And with Gen X and Gen Y starting families, many could find themselves doing something once unthinkable, driving a minivan, just like their parents did. For NPR News, I'm Tracy Samilton in Ann Arbor.
Programs on WILL are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, welcoming Russia's oldest symphonic group, St. Petersburg Philharmonic Orchestra, for an evening of Brahms, Rimsky-Korsakov, and Shostakovich on Thursday, March 31st at 7:30 p.m. More information is available at KrannertCenter.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 30th of March, 2011. It's the birthday of the playwright Sean O'Casey, born in Dublin in 1880. Author